And by the way, my daughter Laura is very active in the entertainment field. She was in the CBS TV show as a regular a member of the cast of Sons and Daughters.
She's
a co-star last season, and she's been active in a number of other TV things. Perhaps you could tell yourself, Laura.
Doing guest shots and commercials and things, and of course the biggest thing that had happened to me was, you know, getting a co-starring role on the series and everything. And even though it didn't last very long, it, you know, was really exciting for a newcomer.
She,
you know, to have something like
when
that.
I first saw her. Maybe that's why.
You mean you saw the show? Oh
yeah.
My God!
One
of the few.
Yeah.
Well, the Fast Nielsens this year kind of, you know, cut it to the quick just as we were building an audience. And
and of course she looks a little like Lois Lane too.
The family resemblance.
She's the spitting image of Supergirl also.
Yeah. I'm her personal manager, and so
yes,
that keeps me busy, because whenever you're creative you need someone to encourage you, you see. And
that's right.
And I know
I get a great
quite
deal
a bit
of encouragement
about,
from
show business. Haven't been on the fringes from way back, which is another story.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which we'll get into sometime.
But it's always, you know, very, very interesting. And, you know, it's the two fields are related. And I always think it is. And, you know, of course, comics is my dad's big thing. And, you know, now I'm in show business and everything. But I'm interested in also doing animation voicing. And I hope to get into doing that.
Various fields.
Expanding, you know, doing whatever I can. Because
she knows some
just,
of the people down at Santa Barbara and the
right
tape of her voice, but so far...
Well, I was almost one of the voices on Valley of the Dinosaurs this last year.
Oh, wow.
I got very close to being the modern woman who went back into the Cave Times, and they also tried me out for the Cave Girl on that, but they decided they wanted to go just a little bit older on the voice. But the people over there are very nice, and so hopefully either at Hanna-Barbera or somewhere else I'll be able to do that eventually. And then that's kind of an interesting link, you know, between between comics and my family background and my own career.
I remember when Laura was a little girl, she was quite a comics fan herself. Could you tell them a little about your favorite comic book strips?
Well, I started out loving Little Lulu.
That's
yeah,
right.
I loved Little Lulu.
So
we still have
and
some of them.
Little Lulu and Tubby, and I thought that, you know, they were just great. And one of the lady, a very nice lady that was sitting next to me at the brunch, started talking to me about Katie Keene and reminded me about, I used to read Katie Keene all the time, and I, you know, hadn't even thought about that for years. And she said, I didn't even see any Katie Keene books downstairs in the dealer's room, and I was really upset. So Katie Keene, and then Brenda Starr was another favorite.
Oh, yes,
of mine.
I love Brenda Starr, too.
From the strips.
Did you ever hear of a comic book called Kewpies?
Of course. The Kewpies.
I have perhaps the first issue. I don't know how I got it, but I have
it. Fantastic
sound.
Does
it's really
collect
adorable.
That at
that's
all?
It's just darling.
Sure.
Really?
She has it.
How many old comics do you still have?
Well, I used to have
Hundreds of them, but most of them are gone now. And
I do have
a lot of the very first issues of the Superman material, but that's in the hands of my attorneys.
We had to sell in order to pay our rent.
Oh, I wonder if I should even go into that. I can't say that I did furnish a detective with a bunch of clips of Superman material and Captain Marvel material, which I felt were very strong duplications and, let's come out to say it, plagiarisms.
Yeah.
And I believe that they did base quite a bit of their case on this information and this material I supplied to them.
Did you feel, though, in 1940 when Captain Marvel came out, that it was definitely, I mean, you...
I feel that a mongoloid idiot would have come to the same conclusion, because they both did the same things. I mean, they both had super strength, they both wore costumes, they both had
the drawings
super similar identities. The front covers of the first issues had the same scene of the characters
doing the same things,
destroying an automobile with villains in it, and it was just tremendously close, and the court that ruled on it did rule that it was an obvious plagiarism. Now, I don't know whether you should use those, use that particular quote, because, you know, after all, it does go into legal matters.
True.
But actually, it is all on the court records, though I'm sure that certain people would want to disguise it now. And really, I feel that this portion of the segment should be omitted, because, as I say, there are certain areas I really shouldn't talk about.
We don't want to...
I'm sure that...
we're just getting friendly with everybody.
That's right. could shake up certain people, so I would appreciate it if you delete that portion. Thank you.
Now, were you familiar with any of the other cartoonists, like, say, Bob Kane in the old days, as people who did other characters that...
I would meet them up the offices of National, and I saw Bob Kane a few times socially, and Joe Shuster would see him more frequently than I. As a matter of fact, I think they used to double date on occasions, you know.
Did you know Mr. Kirby back in those days?
Yes, I did meet him a few times, and I have, of course, tremendous respect for his work, and now I think he is one of the new gods himself. really, he's just fantastic.
He impressed
talent.
Me as a very lovely person.
And a wonderful human being. He is so humble and human about it all, and his head isn't expanded at all, and I just have tremendous admiration for him in every way.
Great respect for him.
Yes, great respect.
Who else did you know back in
'40s? Well, it's really hard to come up with names because...
Well, we went to the ball. I met a Ham Fisher through
you. Oh, Al Capp and Ham Fisher.
And Milton Caniff.
Yeah. I met Gus Edson very briefly. And, of course, I met Milton Caniff several times. And I would be interviewed, and during some of the interviews on the radio, I would meet people like Billy DeBeck, Milton Caniff, and people of that sort.
We have some real collector's item records. I don't know.
They're starting to go. They're starting to fade. Some portions, it is so old.
Well, when they were first getting publicity, they were asked to appear on some radio shows.
On a variety of radio shows. Mm-hmm. And I have these...
And the interviews on the radio shows
these recordings.
Were made on discs.
Oh yes.
And Jerry
so we still have
bought
it.
Some of those, and we have some, and they. Right.
But in view of what has happened, I rarely play them because I get such awful pangs, you know. So, and Joe Shuster just wouldn't listen, wouldn't want to hear them at all. He feels even worse about it than I do.
Yes. Well, you were. Connected with the Superman strip until the war, is that correct?
That's right. Well, no, even longer, because when I came out of the war, I resumed my association. I was on the strip from from the very beginning all the way through to 1948 when we had our first legal action, and when I was away in the Army. That's when they began the system of ghosting, and there are some things I would love very, very much to say now, giving details of why I went off Superman, and that was the beginnings of it, but I guess I'll just have to save it for some other occasion. It just didn't happen by accident.
Sure.
Certain things happened which were very harmful to Joe.
No one goes into litigation.
That's right, without cause.
Without, if not necessary. I mean, it's
very messy and it's very painful.
But anyway, so I worked on it from the very beginnings in 1938, though we actually started on the strip back in about 1933. It took us about 6 years approximately to sell the thing. I was on it until 1948, then I was off it for about 10 years. Then I went back on writing for the national periodicals again in 1959, and I worked for them with no byline at regular page rates from 1959 through 1966 when the litigation resumed. And during that period, I was writing for the Superman family of comics, including Superman, Superboy, Lois Lane, Jimmy Olsen, The Legion of Superheroes, Tales of the Bizarro World, etc.
And the reason that he went back on it was because I talked to Leibowitz, and I begged him for many months.
Joanne, I don't know whether you should go into that. I don't think that you should go into that.
All right, we'll skip that then.
Are you familiar with the Superman cartoons, like the one we saw last night?
Yes, yes.
They're
very good. I got a terrific. Oh, well, yes, there. Well, that was full animation, and they did a great job. I think they made about a dozen or so of them. I don't know the exact number, you know, Paramount features. And in those early Superman cartoons, they adhered very closely to the way that we were doing it at that time. Superman was lighter. He had more of a compact, powerful form. And I think, I think that Joe's version was more of the ideal version of a Superman. And I'm not just too happy with what happened since.
Yeah. Now you said you started it up about 1933.
Right.
How closely is Doc Savage a relative of Superman?
Well, that goes back so doggone many years. That's about 40 years ago. Of course, I read Doc Savage, and you know, at that time, but that is so doggone long ago that I can't really intelligently answer that question.
There were many inspirations.
Oh yes,
that
there
went
were
into Superman,
exactly many,
one.
Many.
I'll
be going into that in my book. There were very many influences.
Are you writing the book now?
Well, I did start work on it, but for various complex reasons, I don't know exactly what will happen. But there are so many fantastic, unbelievable things that happened to him that I think it will be, if it is ever published, it will be an extremely unusual book. It will be unlike any other books about the comic industry that's ever been published, because this will get down to the very nitty-gritty, if it is ever completely written and if it is ever published, and who knows.
Well, the reason is that a great deal of it is very traumatic and painful and to write about.
Sure.
Made many starts and had to give up because
that enters into the area of I'll Cry Tomorrow and books of that sort. Only it happens to deal with the comic book industry, and just so many gruesome things happened that it would be just completely different from any other book on the comics.
Now, Mr. Schuster worked with you up until 48.
That's right. We were associated together for that full period.
How did he handle the artwork, say, after 1940, when it was obvious he was not doing it all himself?
Yeah, well, what happened, of course, is there was so much to be done. Obviously, he needed a staff. He did hire a staff, and he supervised them pretty closely. And sometimes he would make sketches himself. On other occasions, other people would make sketches. And a number of the artists who did make the sketches, actually their sketches just weren't satisfactory. And Joe would work over them and almost completely alter them, so they were almost recognizable. Now, readers may jump to the conclusion that, well, Joe Schuster didn't actually draw the thing. Other people worked on it. But the final result did have the spirit of Joe, and quite often he did do a great deal of work on it. And in many instances, he insisted on inking the Superman heads and the heads of the other leading characters, at least for
faces.
A long time.
Yes.
Oh, yes. Well, he got something almost mystical in his faces that I don't think anyone else has ever caught since.
We think that too much sophistication that came later was distracting and a deterrent rather than an addition. Up to a point it was good, but then they almost got Superman looking mean.
Yes, yes.
And
there's a definite charm.
Yes.
I would have preferred continuing doing it the way the thing was in the original, but great pressure was brought on Joe and I to conform to what they felt comic books should be, that the comic books should be closer to the pulp publications. So
we
had to endure
that
pressure.
Comics were very simple, simply drawn, and most of the comics, the people in the comics didn't look like real people.
Yes.
You know, the Cats and Jammer kids, they didn't look like real people. Neither did Andy Gump. They were caricatures of people.
Yes.
But their work they were real people, so that the things that they were involved in, even though they were very outlandish, were more believable to the readers, because they looked like people.
Yes.
And they weren't like bringing a father.
It was very interesting what you said earlier about, you said something about we all worked in front of mirrors or something. Well, what you said actually was true in the cases of Joe Shuster, because quite often he would work, and I guess many other artists do the same thing. He would work with a mirror in front of him, and quite often he would pose for the expressions himself of the character. He'd grimace, he'd look mad with rage, or he'd look sublimely happy, or whatever the scene called for.
It was Clark Kent and Superman, the face and the head, because I remember you standing there at one time and saying, make him stand like...
Well, I used to pose sometime for Joe in different scenes. I'd take a crossing scene,
or I would
indicate the way I wanted the character to be in action.
And of course, they were together so often that he got his likeness. I have a picture of him that looks just.
But of course, Joe carried the bulk of the art of the conception. But in the beginning, we worked very, very closely together on the way the character should be depicted and costumed, etc.
Because artists put themselves into their own work.
What about the Superman television show? Do you have any opinion on that?
Well, there again, I start entering an area that I probably would go into in the book, my reactions to it, except it was tremendously frustrating to me to not be earning 1 cent from Superman and read in the paper that a $25 million deal had been signed while my family and I were practically on the verge of starvation.
Did you ever meet Mr. Reeves?
Joanne, you did not. My wife did not.
Strangely enough, long before he ever got to be Superman in the television, I met him in Los Angeles, and we became very good friends. And he never knew that I had posed for Lois Lane. We never talked about that. We just—he was a bit player and a stand-in man, and he was doing movie work, and. I was working in a club as a cigarette girl. I was much too young to do it, but, you know, I got away with it, you know, because when they said, well, are you really that age? And I'd say, well, you want to see my birth certificate? And they say, well, all right, never mind. You know, and I don't know if they had asked me to show what I would have done, but, you know, when you need a job, and
right.
You have to be gutsy, I guess.
And years later, in the midst
and we became very good friends. He was like a brother to me, and... He used to stop in every night, and we talked, and we became very good friends. And then years later, he became Superman on television, and it was strange because I had posed, and he never knew that.
Well, I started to say, and then there was a strange experience where my wife and I were walking down the streets of New York one day,
right.
And coming, walking right toward us was George Reeves, the fellow who portrayed Superman on television.
He was wearing a brown leather jacket, very deep in thought, and walking.
And my wife said to me,
she says,
George, why don't you say hello? Well, I'd never met him in person.
Jerry, why don't you say hello?
Well, she said, Jerry, why don't you say hello? Well, here I was walking along with practically nothing in my pocket, with Superman gone forever as far as I was concerned, and I just couldn't bring myself to say hello. And it was odd because, you know, my wife knew him.
I knew him, and I said, let's at least say hello. I said, that was George. And he said, I'm too depressed. I don't feel like talking to anyone. And that was the last time we ever saw him, personally, you know.
I guess you've never met Kirk Allen either.
Yes, we have met Kirk Allen. He's such a wonderful guy.
Oh,
I love
him.
Met him
at,
as a marvelously warm personality.
That must have been about four years ago.
I'll never forget it because listening to him tell about his experiences as Superman, though once again it was one of these things where I never received a cent from the Superman serials either, but still meeting the fella. And his charm is so infectious, and he's such a great guy that I really loved and enjoyed meeting him very much, and I think very highly of him as a talent, as a person.